Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dengbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, February 24th, 2020. The Troika urges the new South Sudan government to respect freedom of expression.
For the transitional period to be a success, a spirit of continuous collaboration supported by the active, engaged, and free voices of citizens and civil society must continue.
South Sudanese refugees in Sudan say they want help returning home.
I am not completely happy, but I'm seemingly happy because the mini peace deal have been signed and then they got spoiled in the end. So I cannot say right now that I'm completely happy until I see the end of this interim period.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The governments of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway, or Troika, are applauding the parties for forming a unity government over the weekend. In a joint statement, the Troika hailed the parties for making the necessary compromises that enabled them to form the government by the agreed-to deadline. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
The SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar took the oath of office as the first vice president alongside four other vice presidents Saturday, paving the way for South Sudan's three-year transitional government. In a joint statement, the Troika said Sunday, "We welcome the fact that the government and opposition parties have made the necessary compromises to allow this important step." The US, the UK, and Norway congratulated the South Sudanese people and the parties for meeting the deadline. Jonathan Sebra, public affairs officer at the U.S. Embassy in Juba, read from the Troika statement.
For the transitional period to be a success, a spirit of continuous collaboration supported by the active, engaged, and free voices of citizens and civil society must continue.
According to the Chapter 1 of the peace deal, opposition leader Riek Machar will chair the governance cluster, while Vice President James Wani-Igga from the SPLM in government will head the economics cluster. Hussein Abdelbage from the South Sudan Opposition Alliance will preside over the service cluster. Taban Dengai from SPLM-IO in government will spearhead the infrastructure cluster, and Rebecca Nyandeng will lead the gender and youth cluster. Again, Jonathan Sebra.
This is an opportunity for the political leadership to take their country forward towards prosperity and peace by making meaningful progress on security sector arrangements, the reform agenda, transitional justice and accountability, and preparations for credible and safe elections.
The Troika says it is eager to work with the transitional government and its partners to achieve peace and stability in South Sudan. According to Sebra,
"We are committed to working with the new transitional government, IGAD, and other regional and international partners to support the people of South Sudan in their pursuit of peace and stability."
In a tweet yesterday, Kelly Craft, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, praised the parties for finally forming the government, calling it a first step toward lasting dignity, stability, and peace in South Sudan. She said, quote, "The hardest work begins now," and urged President Salva Kiir, Riek Machar, and all of South Sudan's leaders to show courage and fortitude needed to translate hope into a better future for South Sudan. Moussa Faki Mohamed, chairperson of the African Union Commission, agreed that the parties have reached the first step towards what he called the more challenging reform process that will require steadfast, collegial, and transparent leadership to deliver on the legitimate expectations for peace of the South Sudanese populations. Regional Bloc IGAD says the leaders have a responsibility to ensure that a conducive and favorable environment for free and active participation of civil society is created, and that the 35% quota for appointing women to government positions as stipulated in the revitalized peace deal is observed. The parties have yet to nominate MPs and ministers for the new government. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Some South Sudanese living in the Sudanese capital Khartoum welcome the new government in South Sudan, saying it's a good sign towards building peace in the country. But some want the government to prioritize making the return of refugees and IDPs as smooth as possible. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Khartoum resident Francis Michael Hassan, who hails from Western Bahr Ghazal State, says he's glad the unity government has finally been formed after the parties failed to meet two previous deadlines and twice had extended the pre-transitional period. Hassan is urging the new unity government to urgently facilitate the return of the displaced persons and refugees so that they can participate in developing their country.
Those who are in the camps, in the IDPs, to go back to their various homes and villages and to have that security so that they may have the ability to embark on agriculture and the rest of their activities, which has been abandoned for some years back.
Ezekiel Yom Ayel fled to Sudan from his hometown of Bentiu in Unity State when the conflict erupted in 2013. He lives in Khartoum's Hajusif neighborhood and says he hopes to return to Bentiu soon. He says the new government should put in place tougher measures to regulate the flow of hard currency within the country and persecute corrupt officials who destroyed the economy.
What makes our country more place of corruption? It is about the dollars. The rates of dollars is very high in our country, whereby the third class would have never get chance to make their practical supports because they are unemployed.
Nadia Bismarck Bungit, a widow with five children who hails from Central Equatoria's Kajukeji County, has lived in Khartoum for the last 25 years. Speaking in Arabic, Bungit says the forming of the transitional government is a good step as she and thousands of other South Sudanese like her in Sudan want to go home.
Gulubna fi beletna.
Bungit says, our heart is in our country. We want to go back to our country and stay in a peaceful and stable South Sudan. She says, we want to take bus from here and travel to our country without any obstacles. We don't need to use plane to go to South Sudan, Bungit says. Andrew McCare is studying IT at Komboni College in Khartoum, who hails from Warabi State. He says, South Sudanese leaders need to honor their commitments this time around.
I am not completely happy, but I'm seemingly happy because the mini peace deal have been signed and then they got spoiled in the end. So I cannot say right now that I'm completely happy until I see the end of this interim period of the government.
McCare says the parties to the peace deal must never take the country back to war. The revitalized peace agreement provides for a 3-year transitional period to be followed by a national election. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we go back to Juba, where the South Sudanese pound has soared in value against the U.S. dollar over the last few days since SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar arrived in Juba to take part in forming the unity government. The exchange rate dropped from one U.S. dollar to 330 SSP last week to one U.S. dollar to 270 SSP today. Economists believe the gain is due to the unity government's formation, but predict the gains won't last if the peace deal is not fully implemented. David Monodanga has the details for VOA from Juba.
The local currency began to rise against the dollar after it became clear the parties would form a unity government on time. During his swearing-in, First Vice President Riek Machar said he was surprised by the sudden change in the value of the South Sudanese pound and called it a good sign.
This morning I have been informed that the dollar has dropped from 33 pounds to 23 pounds. This is peace dividend. It's a good sign that peace brings confidence in the economy and encourages investors back to the country.
Deng Makur, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says the local currency is gaining value due to consumers' and suppliers' expectations, but says the gain will not last long if the government fails to put in place mechanisms to stabilize the currency. The government announced a decision early last year to allow the exchange rate to be determined by the forces of supply and demand. While foreign exchange bureau and private money changers in the black market are exchanging a dollar for 270 South Sudanese pounds today, the government exchange rate stands at 1 USD to 161.29 SSP at the Bank of South Sudan. Makur says that could mean donors are expected to invest in South Sudan.
Those who are supplying dollar, they may expect that this peace will affect or the reserve of the foreign currency will be available in South Sudan, because they may expecting that donors will add something for this peace and stability. So maybe the donors, they are going to give South Sudan some dollars or something like this. So the suppliers may expect that one. So they will bring out all dollars that they store.
Makur says if South Sudan increases food production, the pound will continue to rise in value. A relapse into war in July 2016 spread insecurity across the country and severely affected all economic activities and exacerbated the humanitarian crisis. An International Monetary Fund report released last June said the signing of the agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan in September 2018 improved the prospects for lasting peace in the country. Martin Logo, head of the Department of the Political Science at the University of Juba, says peace must be sustained in order for the exchange rate to remain stable or improve.
Because once the peace is sustained, then the oil production will go up and the exports will even grow big and bigger. And there, I think we can expect something good. The rate of the dollar will go even much lower than that.
In its economic outlook for South Sudan, the African Development Bank projected in its latest report that South Sudan's gross domestic product, or GDP, would grow at a rate of 7.4% this year and by 6.1% by 2021. The report projected that oil exports would reach 180,000 barrels a day, which would boost foreign reserves. Manufacturing would also benefit from increased electricity supply. The report said education and infrastructure are expected to improve, and if peace holds, these improvements could give confidence to private investors. According to the African Development Bank, South Sudan's foreign investment is expected to reach $30 million by the end of the year. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some analysts say old faces don't make a new government. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
How can you help young people discover their talents and develop them?
I think that can be done like from an early stage. Most of us right now are suffering and struggling with things because our parents didn't take the chance of getting to know our talents when we were very young. Because if a kid is young, you can easily tell what he or she is interested in.
I encourage you on how to develop your talent. If there is a need for money, and if I have, obviously I can give you.
What I can do is to inspire that young person to continue with that talent. And to develop them is to make sure that I continue working with that person.
Well, to me, I cannot help them in discovering, but whoever discovers himself, I can help in developing. And he has the will to develop.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. We turn to Cameroon now, where the government is protesting criticism from French President Emmanuel Macron over how the Central African state is handling the conflict in its English-speaking regions. On Monday, over 100 youth rallied at the French embassy, demanding Macron apologize. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
François Lucien Fall, representative of the UN Secretary General in Central Africa, says Cameroonians should support their government and make the February 9 elections a success.
We are here to make an appeal to all the stakeholders in Cameroon to maintain peace and unity in this country. It's very, very important that the citizens of this country vote and choose those people who represent them.
Fall was accompanied this week to Cameroon by the Secretary General of the Economic Community of Central African States, CEMAC, Chadian-born Ahmed Alam Mi. Alam Mi said failure to hold elections may jeopardize efforts to bring peace to the north and southwest regions where separatists have waged a war for independence since 2016. The UN and CEMAC envoys arrived in Cameroon as separatist fighters in the north and southwest mounted roadblocks and either abducted or beat up civilians seen with voter cards and election materials. Electoral body ELECAM said its offices in the northwestern towns of Ndu, Kumbo and Dop have been torched and some of its workers kidnapped. Others are on the run. Patrick Esso fled from the northwestern town of Santa, where he says clashes intensified on Thursday. He says he was abducted and kept in a separatist camp for 5 hours because he was found with a voter card. Esso says it will be impossible for the elections to take place.
The President of the Republic should call for a major ceasefire. I don't think that somebody will go and stand and say he wants to campaign while the country is in flames.
The military has clashed with separatists several times this week and said it killed at least 17 insurgents. The separatists represent English speakers who want to secede from the rest of Cameroon and its French-speaking majority. They have vowed on social media that no election will take place in the English-speaking regions they call Ambazonia. In spite of the threats and attacks, ELECAM chairman Eno Abrams Egwe says the elections will take place and promised voting will be secure.
The different headquarters of political parties must be known by the security in view to protect them. Security corridors will be put in place for the electors to move from one area to the other. Exceptionally, polling centers will be well protected. And also, all the meetings of political party leaders will be well protected.
Political parties say more than 60 people have been abducted in recent days. The separatists have promised on social media to free the abductees after the polls. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A popular children's cartoon by Nigerian animator Adamu Waziri's popular cartoon Bino and Fino flipped the narrative on dominant foreign animation in Africa when it started a decade ago by promoting African culture and African stories. Bino and Fino has done it again, spreading to 15 countries and now targeting markets in Europe. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Millions of young children can now sing along with the Bino and Fino theme song. This is evidence that the Nigeria-made cartoon is gaining traction both home and abroad. Nigerian animator Adamu Waziri, who received his training in Britain, says he started for Bino and Fino animation series in order to promote African stories globally.
Well, a lot of the shows on children's TV in Nigeria are not from Nigeria. So I noticed that I felt that was too much of an imbalance, especially as Africa's most populous nation. It didn't make any sense that our children were watching mainly pretty much, especially when it comes to animation and cartoons, 100% foreign shows. So that was what basically was the spark.
So far, Bino and Fino is the most successful Nigerian animation brand globally and competes favorably with international counterparts. Apart from Nigeria and its neighbors in Africa, the cartoon airs in places that include the United States, Britain, and parts of Europe. The series has brought success, but also come at a cost, says Waziri.
To actually produce a series takes a lot of finance, a lot of time. It takes about maybe 2 to 3 years to finish a series, at which point you're not making any revenue. So you have to find the team. And on top of that, a lot of people were not trained up to produce animation in Nigeria to that quality level. So we have to do a lot of training.
Still, most of the cartoons broadcast in Nigeria come from abroad, but children like 6-year-old Captain are choosing Bino and Fino over foreign-based cartoons.
I love Bino and Fino. It's an interesting cartoon. They never argue. They're always good. They have fun. They never lie. They're always good. They're always nice. They're friendly. They always play with each other nicely.
Nigerian parents like Angela Zaka are also pleased that their children can learn about African culture and values.
They can actually relate to it. Like, my kids are always bickering at each other sometimes, and I could tell when there was a scene where their dad asked them why they weren't talking to each other. I could relate to that, and that's why I really like it. And it doesn't appear foreign to me.
Nigeria's animation industry is still in its infancy, and so is smaller than its international counterparts. Low funding, lack of skilled manpower, and a weak distribution system are major limitations. But that has not stopped Nigerian animators like Waziri from pressing ahead and putting African content on screens around the globe. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
The World Food Programme says it needs $103 million to meet urgent food assistance in Zimbabwe, where more than half the population is food insecure due to recurring droughts and a declining economy. Columbus Mavhunga reports from Eastern Mudzi District, one of the country's most affected areas.
Zimbabwe's Mudzi District on the border with Mozambique is one of the areas most affected by severe food shortages. 75-year-old farmer Justina Marimbindi says years of recurring drought decimated her crops and now depends on monthly food handouts of cowpeas, cooking oil, and cornmeal. She says, "My granary is now empty," and pointing to her field with stunted crop, she adds, "We farm, but it doesn't bear fruits. I sold my goats. There is no hope that there is anything that will come out of the fields. We depend on these handouts," she said, pointing her handouts from UN's WFP. But not every Zimbabwean who needs food aid is getting it. 94-year-old Rudia Rukwenya was turned away at the local distribution center. She says, "I was told that my name is not on the list. Maybe they will give me next time. For now, I have to depend on my daughter," said seated to her 67-year-old daughter Edith Muntusa, and adding that, "That's why I have come to her home after I was not given anything. But she needs food assistance too, as her crops failed and she needs to feed her children," she said. An ongoing wave of rains in the area is bringing some hope. But Robert Mzezewa, the Muzi district coordinator, says that may be a little too late in a country where the World Food Program says about 7.7 million people will require food aid until the next harvest, expected between April and July.
The situation can be as bad because a lot of people who planted during the first rains, their crops have not fared well and they were burned by the sun. And that also will maybe cause the food security situation bad.
For years, food insecurity situation was mainly for rural folks. But this time, WFP Assistant Executive Director Valerie Guarnieri says it's affecting both rural and urban dwellers.
Difficult for rural populations who are struggling with the lack of rain to grow enough food to meet their needs, and difficult for urban populations who are unable to find the piecemeal work that they normally rely on and are seeing rising prices and sometimes stock shortfalls in the shops. So we're scaling up our programs, but in order to sustain urgent food assistance and resilience programs, we need an additional $103 million for the next 6 months.
But even if food supplies can recover, Zimbabwe's struggling economy and sky-high inflation will continue to squeeze the country's most vulnerable. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Muzi, Zimbabwe.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. The governments of the U.S., the U.K., and Norway are embracing the formation of South Sudan's unity government on Saturday. In a joint statement, the Troika praised the parties for making the necessary compromises that enabled them to form the government by the deadline. SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar was reinstalled as first vice president, as were four other vice presidents. Jonathan Sebra from the U.S. Embassy in Juba read a Troika statement saying, "For the transitional period to be a success, a spirit of continuous collaboration supported by the active, engaged, and free voices of citizens and civil society must continue." South Sudanese living in Khartoum also welcomed the new government, saying it's a good sign towards building peace, but some want the government to prioritize making the return of refugees and IDPs as smooth as possible. Francis Michael Hassan from Western Bahar al-Ghazal says he's glad the government has finally been formed after the parties failed to meet two previous deadlines. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Celebrate by Isaka.
Isaka number one, Bidugu Gonat independent. Celebrate South Sudan Independence Day.
Celebrate,
celebrate.
My Bidugu Sudan, celebrate.
Masau
Sudan, Masau
Sudan,
celebrate.
Celebrate.
My Bidugu Sudan, celebrate.
Masau
Sudan, Masau Sudan.
Arfa halam da Junub Sudan. Arfa alam kadina fo, nezil alam da Sudan gedim. Arfa alam da Sudan gedi, arfa alam da Junub Sudan. Independence Day. Jibu Arabia, Zikabele Pata, Wenu Molodo, Kelena Sikuru.
sasa tazaman.
We've been listening to Isaka Number 1 with the song Celebrate. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. And join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Isaka Number 1. Gidukukuna to celebration. Kedenina celebrate.
Asabiga Uriafi.
Asabiga Salamofi.
Nina Abba Hajar Udam.
Azo haja juta
kelna geni begel bawai
kelna geni befikra wai
kelna geni zena siwai
fi yunu
ze yunu bin.